Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Phil Dierking, Marcia James, and Jill Robbins. Katie Weaver will tell us what's trending today, and later we will bring you this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
A new school in Uruguay is teaching about environmental sustainability and practicing what it teaches. The school in the small town of Jaurigibere was built with recycled materials. Clean energy powers the building. The students learn to grow their own organic food, and a regular curriculum is combined with lessons on farming, recycling, and water conservation. The 43 students at the school grow their own crops like tomatoes, basil, and strawberries. The food they grow, they get to eat too. The Uruguayan organization TAGMA developed this school, called Public School 294. TAGMA supports responsible and sustainable ways of living and using natural resources. U.S. architect Michael Reynolds designed the school, which opened in February 2016. Reynolds is known for his advocacy of sustainable building designs. This alternative school system is popular with the students. One of them, Felipe Sanchez, says the curriculum makes him more interested in class.
In my other school, we didn't plant anything, and it was not fun. I was bored, and my friends did not understand me, nor treat me well. In this school, my friends like me, and we can plant and do a lot of things.
Solar energy powers the school. The school also uses filtered rainwater. 60% of the building is made of recycled materials that the community collected. The school tries to support a culture of community in the classroom. Students from different grade levels learn together and help each other. Rita Montanz is a teacher at Public School Number 294.
Our core teaching is based on principles of sustainability, environmental protections, and coexistence. So naturally, it creates an environment where it is easier to make relations. The multigrade system enables a fourth grade child to study with a third grade student and monitor him or her. A second grade student can be in preschool, and a first grade student can be with the third grade students.
The school is still young, but its teachers and administrators are hopeful that the lessons their students are learning will last a lifetime.
I hope that when younger children graduate from here, they take away with them this seed we sowed, just like we grow plants in the nursery, and that the ideas to protect the environment and to live in harmony with the environment remain important.
I'm Phil Dierking.
Ishmael Delgado has been living in the United States since the early 1990s. Delgado entered the country without legal permission. He came alone across a desert. 2 years ago, the U.S. government told him to return home because he is an undocumented immigrant. A short time later, Delgado fled to a church in Phoenix, Arizona. Today, he sleeps on a bed in the bottom floor of the building.
I came along with my clothes, and the first day I remember, I don't know, what's too much things buzzing in my head.
Delgado has exchanged his freedom for the safety of Shadow Rock Church.
Pastor Ken, at the beginning, I saw him, his eyes. He wants to help me. He says, okay, the doors of Shadow Rock are open for you. Oh, my God.
The Reverend Ken Heiselman is the head of the church.
He needs a chance, and our system doesn't allow for very many chances for people.
Delgado admits the U.S. immigration system might not give him another chance. But he says living in the church has changed him.
Right now, I don't say bad words. I don't need alcohol to live. I don't smoke. I don't need it.
Six-Toe Paws, another undocumented immigrant, joined Delgado at the Shadow Rock Church 9 months ago.
I feel like my son, my little son, is my power. This is something that can give me more strength to stay and fight.
Six-Toe sees his son from time to time, but he misses having a job.
Sometimes it's good, sometimes you feel in the morning like everything is going fine. If you go check TV or someone come and I say, you know, Trump, they doing this law. Trump, they signed this up. You know, they change. You feel like, what's going on? What happened when that border?
Other undocumented immigrants are living in fear of the U.S. government. They know the protection offered by some religious groups can last only so long. I'm Marcia James.
World Health Organization has made an appeal to scientists, drug manufacturers, and governments. The WHO wants them to work together to develop drugs to fight 12 bacteria. These bacteria are able to resist powerful antibiotic drugs. The resistance is so unusually strong, all 12 have been given a special name, superbug. The United Nations Agency reported this week the 12 superbugs are a threat to human health. It said they have the ability to turn easily treatable infections into killers. A few examples are blood, lung and brain infections, food poisoning, and gonorrhea, a disease spread by sexual activity. The WHO says superbugs can also pass along genetic material that helps other bacteria become resistant to drug treatment. Maripol Kini is the UN agency's assistant director general. She said, "Antibiotic resistance is growing, and we are fast running out of treatment options." She urged governments to give drug companies reasons to develop new treatments. If we leave it to market forces alone, the new antibiotics we most urgently need are not going to be developed in time, she said. Antibiotic drugs can lose their effectiveness when people take more or less than the amount required by doctors. When this happens, infections that were at one time easily treated become resistant. Germs can also be spread in nature from air, water, and animals. I'm Jill Robbins.
The social networking website Twitter has put new measures in place to try to stop users from being harassed or from seeing things that offend them. Some free speech activists are worried that the changes could lead to unpopular ideas being censored. The measures were announced last week. They include hiding possibly threatening messages, even if no one has complained to the company that the person who sent them is abusive. In a statement announcing the change, the company said, "We're working to identify accounts as they're engaging in abusive behavior, even if this behavior hasn't been reported to us." The company said it would take action only when it strongly believes abuse has taken place. It uses software to identify abuse. But some free speech supporters are worried about the changes. Suzanne Nossel is the executive director of the free speech activist group PEN America. She said Twitter is considering taking action, in her words, where there is really no problem that needs to be solved. To take action when there hasn't been a complaint raises the concern of whether there will be mistaken blocking of accounts or suspending of accounts, she said. That raises a risk. Twitter has been pressured to deal with abusive speech in the past few months after some famous people complained about long-term planned abuse campaigns. Actress Leslie Jones left Twitter for a brief time last year after she received many racist messages and death threats. Several months after she met with the head of Twitter, the company announced it had developed new ways to deal with abusive messages. Those ways included strengthening the ability of users to stop receiving messages that had certain words or expressions in them, and expanding the ability of users to report abuse. Twitter also retrained its workers on how to deal with online abuse. Esha Bhandari is a lawyer at the American Civil Liberties Union's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. She told VOA that she supports these kinds of changes, which permit users to have more control over what messages they see, and from whom they receive messages. She said the ACLU encourages companies to focus less on ways it can stop abuse and more on tools that allow users to control their experience on the platform, she said. But some tools launched by Twitter give the company a lot of power to decide what messages are seen. In February, the company began hiding what it called potentially abusive or low-quality tweets. The messages will still be able to be seen, but only if people search for them. VOA asked Twitter many times for information on how it decided which messages are low quality. Twitter did not answer our questions. Twitter also introduced a safe search function. This removes messages that have potentially sensitive content from search results. VOA also asked the company how it identified this kind of message, but Twitter again did not answer our questions. As a private company, Twitter is not forced to permit free speech. However, spokespeople say the service permits free expression, and they say they believe in speaking truth to power. PEN America and the ACLU support this role. Nossel and Bhandari say they consider Twitter a kind of global town square, where everyone's voice has equal weight. Bhandari said, as a practical matter, decisions made by Twitter have a huge impact on the messages that we receive, and I hope that Twitter and other companies take those responsibilities seriously. Nossel noted that Twitter has financial reasons to be careful, as it seeks to balance free expression and stopping abuse. The power and influence of their platform depends on the free flow of ideas, so I think there are commercial reasons why they would not want to limit free speech, Nossel said. And I think for their users, they do have a kind of softer, implicit contract that they are going to be a platform in which you can express things freely.
This is what's trending today. School children across the United States have been taking part in local and state spelling competitions. These competitions are called spelling bees. The young competitors spell words that even some adults may never have heard of. More than 280 local winners will earn the right to compete in this year's Scripps National Spelling Bee. The event will take place from May 28th to June 3rd near Washington, D.C. at the National Harbor in Maryland. Most competitors in the National Spelling Bee are between the ages of 12 and 14. But this year, one competitor will be less than half that age. Meet 5-year-old Edith Fuller. Last weekend, she won an area spelling bee in her home state of Oklahoma. The 5-hour competition lasted 37 rounds. Edith correctly spelled words like savruga, a kind of Russian caviar, jacamar, a kind of bird, and nisai, a child of Japanese immigrants. Her winning word, janana, a Sanskrit word that is related to having a higher level of knowledge. Remember, Edith is 5. She is the youngest person ever to qualify for the National Spelling Bee. Not so long ago, when she was just 4, Edith surprised her parents when she was able to spell the word restaurant correctly. At that moment, her mom and dad realized their child might have a mental gift. Her mother told the Tulsa World newspaper this week, "We knew there was something special there." Edith is homeschooled, so her parents are able to spend a little more time teaching her to spell. Her mom says learning new words is fun for Edith. She told Tulsa World that studying for the spelling bee helped Edith learn about different countries and cultures and different kinds of food. About 2% of U.S. children are homeschooled. Yet homeschooled kids usually make up 8 to 10% of those who make it to the National Spelling Bee. Her father spoke with Tulsa's KJRH-TV about the benefits of homeschooling Edith. "We have the freedom to answer her questions, to help her advance at her own pace," he said. Now the Fullers must prepare young Edith for the National Bee. But no matter how she does there, Edith is already being called a spellebrity. And that's what's trending today. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Imagine you hear a mother or father talking to a child. The parent wants the child to do well in school, but the child does not like to read books. The exchange might sound something like this.
"To get a good grade, the first thing you have to do is read books."
"Why do people always tell me to read books? I don't think books are fun."
"Lots of people don't read books. That's why they do badly in school. The last thing you want is a bad grade."
Today's Everyday Grammar program is not about reading books, nor is it about how Americans lecture their children. In fact, our report is about something very different, commonly used nouns. Today, we are going to explore two of the most commonly used nouns in American English: people and thing.
A noun is traditionally defined as a word that names a place, object, or person. Nouns can be plural, meaning more than one, or possessive, or they can be both plural and possessive. You can read more about these words in an Everyday Grammar program called Understanding Noncount Nouns. You can find it and other stories on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Sometimes words take the place of nouns. These words are called pronouns. Examples include I, us, that, it, and so on. In American English, speakers use pronouns much more often than they use nouns. This information comes from Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber, two experts on English grammar. Conrad and Biber say that Americans generally use pronouns more when speaking because they understand the activities and things that the pronouns represent. This is not to say that nouns are never heard in everyday conversation. In fact, a few nouns are often used in conversation. Two such words are people and thing.
The noun people is a plural noun. it does not generally suggest a specific group of individuals. Instead, Americans often use people when they mean everyone. Conrad and Biber say that people is the most commonly used noun when Americans are speaking with one another. They generally use this word to make a general statement about life. For example, you might hear someone say, "Lots of people make the same mistake," or, "Why do people always criticize me?" This use of people is considered polite and acceptable in formal and informal speech. You will hear it at school, at restaurants, in the workplace, and even in political speeches.
According to Conrad and Biber, the noun thing is almost as common in American English as the noun people. The word thing can suggest an object, but this meaning is rare in conversation. Instead, the word thing has several meanings. First, thing can mean an event or activity. For example, imagine you are traveling to a city and your friend wants to make a suggestion. He or she could say, "After you arrive, the first thing you should do is eat a hamburger."
Second, thing can suggest a statement or some kind of communication. For example, you might hear students talking quietly after school. "The last thing I heard was that Tommy asked Laura to the dance." In this sentence, thing refers to some kind of communication, in this case, a rumor, about two people going to a dance together. Third, the word thing can refer to a general situation. In many cases, the speaker will give a general opinion about the situation by using an adjective. For example, you might hear a person say, "It's a good thing you bought an umbrella. I think it's going to rain today." The speaker is showing that they have a good opinion about the other person's decision to buy an umbrella.
Now, think back to the exchange at the beginning of our program.
To get a good grade, the first thing you have to do is read books.
Why do people always tell me to read books? I don't think books are fun.
Lots of people don't read books. That's why they do badly in school. The last thing you want is a bad grade.
You will notice several uses of people and thing in this conversation. The word people is used to make a general statement about life. The word thing in the example is used to suggest a general situation in which the speaker expresses their opinion. Our goal here is not to give you a list of all of the meanings of people and thing. Instead, we want to tell you about the most common meanings of these common nouns.
Learning how these two words are used will not only help you understand Americans when they speak. Using these words will also help you sound more natural to an American. The next time you are watching an American film or television show, try to listen to how the speakers use the nouns people and thing. Try to use what you know about the situation to understand the meaning. These definitions are difficult to learn, but the most important thing is that you do not give up. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.